everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Speakeasy Podcast. My name is Kate.
And we are from ReverseThieves.com. And you can go there to check out the blog and see our old posts and podcasts, as well as just, the wondrousness of our work. If you'd like to contact us, we are ReverseThieves@gmail.com. And another fun-filled episode. This is more of a, you know, I always like to say ongoing investigations, which never worked on the blog, but actually worked pretty well in the podcast. I think people got it when we did it in the podcast, but never got it when we did it on the blog.
Well, you know, we gotta be right sometimes, I guess. I don't know. And, you know, we're coming to you live from the pandemic. It's Saturday night. It's not. But, you know, that's how I'm feeling. I'm feeling a little like I feel like now I go from like being sort of like hysterical, like I have to hysterically laugh because everything is terrible or I'm going to like lose it, or just like being really tired all the time.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like as someone who is less technically an essential worker and goes in, I feel like it probably, on a certain level, has normalized my life to a certain degree, because I still have somewhat of a normal schedule because of that. Whereas I feel like, at this point, I feel like a lot of people are starting to go a little stir crazy.
Yeah, you know, and we had to, like, a lot of people, including myself, have canceled, like, a lot of holiday plans that we were hoping were going to happen, and of course can't, and yeah, I know. It's such a weird time, right? Because on one hand, it's like, yeah, I get it. We're all sort of frustrated. We all want to just do our normal thing or whatever, and people are getting restless, including myself. I'm not, like, taking myself out of that, but then I have to just put it in perspective sometimes, because I'm like, what am I really being asked to do here? Am I just being asked to be as lazy as possible for a whole year? Because, like, sometimes that's all it feels like. It's like, could you just watch Netflix all week? Could you just do that for us and save the fucking world? And you're like, you know what? I don't know. Some days I just can't feel like I'm suffering.
But despite all of that, we marshal on and still do a monthly podcast.
I mean, I'm watching more anime and reading more manga than ever. So again, that is my sacrifice to the world. So you're welcome.
I mean, the fact that I talk about two shows that I finished two whole seasons of should say something.
Yeah, it's wild. So as Al said at the beginning, we are going to mostly just talk about, like, this is less projects and just like, hey, this is what we've been up to. I think we're mostly doing individual stuff, but we'll start with a movie that we both watched.
Don't you mean live through, Kate?
I mean, it's like 90 minutes, so I feel like I've seen worse.
But Kate, aren't you, what do you call it? Isn't it the way of the internet to exaggerate, you know, how much you've suffered for your art and your review?
That is true. This is the year where everything gets put into perspective.
I see.
So, that's right, ladies and gentlemen, we watched Burn the Witch. Now, to be fair, the original one-shot by Taikubo was, like, fine. It was, like, a fun, I think we gave it, like, a good, you know, like, hey, that was fun and whatever kind of a review.
I hadn't read it, but you had. And I remember,
okay,
you were like,
he's putting it on me.
I remember generally your review was, it was fine. There were elements that you didn't like, especially the main dude character. And I think you weren't super thrilled with how the magic system worked, which sounds like a very Al complaint, but
I think that tells you something though, right? Because that means that it was noticeable enough that I mentioned it.
And but you were like, eh, it was harmless enough. Hopefully, like, if he expanded it out, he'd like remove some of the things I didn't like, and you know, added more what I like about early Bleach. Yay.
I'm so glad that you remember my review because he basically did none of that. He basically revised it and was like, here, let me do all the things that were wrong, as far as I'm concerned. So this movie, you know, that came out, they also, like, I don't know how, like, what the order was, but okay, so there was the original one shot. Then there was also a revision of that one shot that was like six chapters or something, like where it was like a retelling of it. And then there's the movie. And I don't know if, like, you know, they were like, we're gonna write the movie, so make this. Or it was like, he made that, and then they based, you know what I
Yeah.
mean? Like, I don't know what, or if it was like, no, it was just supposed to be like a movie tie-in. So, like, they did it. I don't actually know.
I'm like 90% sure, unless somebody has like proof otherwise, that like they keep throwing this out there to see if people care about it enough for it to be like a full series.
Well,
Given the direction and our opinion of how this went over. Your answer is hell no.
I mean, so, like, despite the guy who I think was both worse and better at the same time than he was in the original one shot, but, like, forget him for a minute. Like, I was just so focused in this movie about, like, how convoluted the like organizations were. Here's the ones here. Okay, I wrote down the organization names that I could remember, and they don't even fit on a single line. And this is like a less than 90-minute movie. Okay? Like, it's like the seven legendary Martian. Marchin, whatever, I don't know how to say it. The Pipers, the Inks, the Crown Council. There was like two or three others, and all of those things are like name dropped in. It's like, oh my God. Like, we don't need how many of the, I don't need this many organizations. This is so convoluted.
I think the idea was to tease all these things in hopes that it would like make you want to know more about this world so that you're like, yeah, I've totally wanted to see this as a full series. What is up with all these organizations?
Said no one ever.
I'm sure someone's.
Like, you only need like one, may or two. Two is enough to be intriguing. One even. Bleach only needed like the Soul Society and the Vizards to be interesting, and it needed nothing else that ever happened in that series. And so therefore,
And this shows very limited the face. The seven Marchin are basically hollows.
I just felt like the world, the way it ties in to like what the dragons are, all of these organizations, fake Grimjaw who shows up to like, I mean, he was actually the only person that I thought had cool, the visuals for his magic I thought were really awesome. I thought that that was like unique and interesting, and like the way that he did magic was cool. But yeah, I just felt like there was, like, I understand, I do see what your point about, like, oh, it's here to like intrigue you so that like maybe they could make it into a series. But like, I feel like at the same time, like, I don't know. Just make a good movie first.
Yeah, plus I feel like there were enough mysteries about the single organization that they work for. And like it had several departments. So like, yeah, sell the mystery of where they work for first. And then when you have a full series, start laying seeds for like other things, as it were.
I also thought the way that they like beat the final enemy in the movie was pretty dull. Like, it was like, what?
Me and my roommate were having a long discussion. The problem is, effectively, the main characters do absolutely nothing but run around for the whole episode. They are unable, if you think about it afterwards, they objectively did nothing. They defeated none of the enemies. Every enemy was defeated either by a bigger enemy or by a, like, random side character. And so, join them. And then, what do you call it? And then, essentially, once they were part of the team, did nothing.
Yeah, so I think it doesn't really build any excitement for the main cast.
Yeah, it makes them seem incompetent. Like, if they had defeated, like, even a form of the big bad, and then, like, then, you know, he has another form, and that gets taken out by a side character, that would make them seem at least decently like, they're competent, but then, you know, the fight got taken up a notch, and they were in over their head, and then they had to be bailed out. Or, you know, they think they defeat the main character, but then, and then when, you know, they've left, it, like, comes back, and then somebody else. There was, like, plenty of ways to do it that sold them a basic level of competency and did not just make them seem like they didn't have to win. Like, sometimes, like, taking a defeat, you know, shows how your characters have to grow. But just having other characters come in and clean up their mess just makes them seem really sad.
Yes, I agree. And I don't know how people are responding, you know, to the movie or, you know, but, you know, obviously, I think a lot of people have a lot of fondness for Bleach, mm-hmm. and a lot of people miss it, so, but I just didn't feel like, even that, like, initial spark, I just didn't feel like was here, because I enjoyed Bleach for quite a while, but I just don't feel like that was here, and I don't know if other people, you know, feel differently.
Well, so. I feel the another main problem is, I could challenge you to a game that we call it, there are no winners and losers other than the story, but name the character of the cast, especially the main cast, that you liked. I felt...
Oh, the little doggy dragon.
Okay. So the mascot who didn't have any dialogue, and probably if he had any dialogue would ruin his character. Didn't they imply that the dog was also a perv if he talked, or is that... Am I thinking of something else?
Oh, God. Never mind, then. I don't know.
I swear that they implied that the dog was even a bigger perv than the boy, making him...
Aren't we done with that now? Like, can't we be done?
No, Kate, sadly. I mean, it would be nice if we could be done, but we are not done, sadly.
I feel like I'm done. Obviously, I'm done with that character just in general, but, like, if it was, like, a fan service series or what, I mean, you know what I mean? But, like, if you're trying to do sort of, like, shonen, all ages, we want everybody to come to the party, like, you know, like, can we be done with this? Like,
you could still have that character in your true love ruse, just...
Enough ranting. I think, actually, luckily, this is, like, the only thing we didn't like, and then everything else we're going to talk about is stuff we liked.
One of my shows I have questions about, but generally there is a lot of love. But, so, 10 out of 10, would recommend. Burn the Witch. Please give Kate 3 seasons and a movie.
Burn this town to the ground. Okay, so on to something else. So I've been reading, and I know we talked about the first episode of this, but I don't know if you watched any more of it, Al. But I've been reading Smile Down the Runway.
Like, I watched a few more episodes and then just schedule, like, pushed it back and pushed it back, and I just... So I've seen about 3 or 4 episodes.
So I think maybe I've seen about that many as well. So I ended up... I think my initial, like, review of the first episode, I talked about how the manga was coming out and that, like, I felt like I was kind of more interested to see it in manga form just because, like, all the fashion stuff, and I just thought it could be really cool and not to do the disservice to the anime in any way, but I was like, hey, I probably will go check out the manga instead. So I'm on volume 5 now, and it's taken some turns, not like something crazy, like unexpected, but I think there's a couple of things that I was surprised about. And one of them is, so in the first few episodes, the story really focuses on Chiyuki, who is an aspiring model. She is, like, very, very dedicated, but there's one problem. She's quite short especially to be, like, a Paris runway model. She's considered, like, by most agencies, like, oh, well, you're, like, you could do other modeling. You have all wonderful qualities, but to do this specific type of modeling, like, no way will you ever be able to do it with your height.
I'm sorry. For some reason, because my roommate likes to watch Seinfeld as kind of just background noise in the house, I just remember that time in Seinfeld where George becomes a hand model, and it just popped into my head. You can do other kinds of modeling. Sorry, please continue.
Now I'm gonna have that in my head, though.
I just had to share why I randomly burst out laughing when Kate had said nothing funny.
And so Chiyuki ends up meeting this boy named Ikuto, who is I was at the beginning of the story, I wouldn't say he's like an aspiring fashion designer, but he loves fashion. He does a lot of, like, sewing and making clothes for his family. And he has it in him. He just hasn't thought about it as, like, this is what I could be yet. And Chiyuki sees kind of an opportunity to get some attention for herself by, like, wearing some amazing clothes to sort of, like, offset her height. So this is kind of like a scheme she sort of concocts, and then, like, they become friends, and then they sort of are like, we're gonna make it to the top, you know, together, and they have, like, a pretty cool, like, early victory where Ikuto is helping with this fashion show, and a model has to drop out, and Chiyuki is able to, like, sub in, but the dress is not, like, the right fit for her because she's so much shorter, and they have to alter it, and, like, they have this, like, kind of early victory that, like, spurs them on, you know, for their dreams. But then, like, in the manga, Chiyuki is, like, gone. She's, like, disappeared from the story. It's basically, like, to me, I thought she was the main character. I was like, okay. And also, Ikuto is, like, a co-protagonist. But it's more about Ikuto. And Chiyuki, like, appears occasionally. And I don't know, maybe it'll... You know, it's an ongoing series. So I don't know if, like, oh, for a few books, it'll really focus on him. And then, you know, we'll switch. Or, like, she'll come back into it more or whatever. But I was kind of jarred by it because I thought it was going to be sort of parallel stories of them kind of on their journeys?
I mean, there could be several reasons. I mean, shonen manga is really, especially something like Shonen Jump, is really dictated by opinion polls. But I feel like it is not out of the question shoujo or jose manga to have similar, like, certain editors will be like, oh no, you should really focus on this character's story because this is what, you know, we get all the letters and this is what, you know, the audience seems to care about. And even if you don't want to, and it's not always that cynical, sometimes that's just what the, you know, the author starts with one story and then is like, you know, and thinks it's going to be an even thing. And then they just like, man, I really like writing, or like, it really feels easier to write this character story. And that's what they focus on. So, you know, it could be, or it could be some third scenario that I don't, or like you said, maybe they're just focusing at this point on him and they'll switch back to her more later on. You know, that's just Al throwing out ideas.
No, yeah, I'm sure that there's so many scenarios where that all makes sense. I was just thrown off by it. And I also like Chiyuki and want to know her story. So it's not like I dislike following, you know, the fashion designer and sort of his journey or anything, but I liked that it was approaching it from sort of both sides of, I mean, there's multiple sides to fashion, obviously, but like it was following it from like the model perspective and from like the designer perspective. So I liked that we were seeing both of those things. The other thing that has sort of switched a little bit was, so like initially, like Ikuto is working as like an assistant to a designer, and that's sort of kind of like an apprenticeship. So that's, you know, high maintenance, bananas, always making these big demands and whatnot. And he's still doing that, but in volume 4 and like going into 5, and I think will be at least probably another volume further, it's like become sort of a Project Runway challenge where he's at this fashion institute and they accept applications for this yearly event, and everybody's in competition with each other, and the prize is like studying in Paris, you know. So it's like, and then like everybody's going head to head and like nobody's making friends here or whatever. So it's like very, very reality competition show feeling.
Kate, for some reason, all I imagined was the second twist was going to be, you know, it starts off where he's working for this demanding boss, and then it turns into he has to win the space fashion show or else the Earth gets invaded, a la Battle Athlete's Victory.
Love it. I think that's in volume 9. Which I was always a fan of Project Runway, so like I'm totally into this like contest that they are in. But it's like, yeah, it's now it's like shifted to being like a tournament arc, I guess. So like, where is it pulling all of its inspiration from? I don't know. Also, the art. Not always, but it's a like, sometimes the way that women are drawn or shown is very like, the attention to detail about, you know, the curves and things of their bodies. So it's also like, huh, okay, all right. Like interesting.
What kind of magazine does it run in?
I was just about to say, I didn't look, so I'm gonna look it up. Oh, well, what? Okay, everything makes more sense now that I looked what magazine this runs in? It runs in Weekly Shonen Magazine.
Because, I mean, my next question...
My mind is blown right now.
Say that. This is why we do these reviews. We actually sometimes learn as much as the audience does.
That was so inspiring, Al.
I feel like sometimes authors are just horny on Maine. And what do you call it? I've even seen like this with, you know, like I feel like Land of the Lustrious, like, I mean, that is also in, I think, a Seinen magazine, but still, like, every once in a while, that author, she is just like, butt shot, butt shot, butt, butt shot, butt shot, butt shot. But I feel like that is not pandering if you've ever seen her art outside of it. That is not her pandering to the audience. That is her pandering to herself. That does not totally indicate what kind of author or magazine it's in, but I thought I'd ask.
No, because now it makes sense that it's more focused on a guy protagonist. Mm-hmm. The way that women are drawn is sometimes very loving. Is the word I'll use? And there's a tournament arc. Well, okay, I will have to say, I have to give Weekly Shonen Magazine credit, though, for doing a fashion series.
Plus, I feel like a lot of these magazines are, like, more and more want a dual audience, so I feel like, you know, there's no reason to throw away a female audience, but also no reason to assume that a male audience would not also be interested in this.
So, like, I feel, like, a little middle about the series. There are some things that I really like about it, and I am really, the Project Runway arc has really just started, so that might cement, like, my enjoyment of it. So I'm continuing to read. I'm just, like, at the very beginning of Volume 5, so I'll continue, but yeah, I don't feel like it's a strong recommend, but it's entertaining.
So, I was going to go in a different order, but since you had a kind of mixed review, but generally positive, I will reciprocate and add a little bit of clarification to our previous podcast. So, I thought that the new Higurashi New was a remake of the original Higurashi. It turns out I was 100% wrong. The new Higurashi New, or Go, Go, or G-O-U, the new Higurashi New, it's what it's called in English, is in fact new Higurashi stories. So, give a mild spoiler, because I feel like at this point, it's fairly well known. Higurashi is a horror mystery series in the small town where supposedly there is this god that was upset with a god in the small town that was upset with this dam project a few years that was going to flood the town and is cursing certain members of the people of the town who at first side with the dam project and now break any rules of the town. And it starts with the main character who moved from the big city to the small town and thereby doesn't know, you know, what exactly is going on, and murders happen and there's a time reset. And so, the first series was kind of a cult hit, very popular, but also kind of famous for having mediocre, animation at best. And so, I swore I heard that this series was a remake, like, let's do the beloved original series, but now with, you know, decent animation. And I saw some changes, but I figured, all right, well, you know, if you do a remake, you know, you make some executive decisions. But watching the first arc and some of the second arc, I realized, oh, these are basically, as far as I can tell, unseen time loops from the original story. But a lot of them seem to be based on the idea that you've seen the original series, and thereby these loops are kind of twists or like variations on the, because they're basically, once again, not to spoil too much, a whole bunch of time loops that we never see in the original story, that like one of the characters kind of makes some mentions of like timelines where they didn't succeed and like break the time loop of like, ah, there are time loops like this and time loops like that. And as far as I can tell, this is an examination of some of the types of failed time loops that that character mentioned. And so, on one hand, if you're a Higurashi fan, this is an interesting thing to see, like some of these timelines that we only got hints of, or like, you know, some interesting scenarios. So, if you are a longtime Higurashi fan, I haven't been too thrilled with any of the kind of newer materials. So I have liked the writing in this so far. But if this was supposed to be something that drew in new people, I don't really feel it does a great job, because so many of these, because the original stories, how they were played out, I think did a good job of building up the mysteries and like laying out important clues so to help you solve the mystery at the end. I mean, my major complaint with the original TV series, if you heard like when I was on other people's podcasts, is the TV series is that the original TV series, the first season is so horror based, and then the second season is so mystery based that like they kind of save a lot of the clues and important mystery stuff for the second half, so it kind of feels like two different series, and it saves a lot of important clues for the second half that should have been in the first half, whereas the game kind of is doing both of those moods at the same time, so you're having horror throughout, but it's also always presenting itself as something that you should try to solve, so it feels a little more consistent in tone. But I don't feel it's like a fatal flaw in the TV series, but I do feel in the original TV series, I just feel like I understand why certain people were turned off either by the first half or couldn't get into it, whereas they might have gotten into it by the second half. I've been enjoying this. I feel like, I don't know, it feels like a missed opportunity, especially on the way I think I was initially sold on it, of like, I think this had an opportunity to really retell the Higurashi story in a way with better animation, and in a way that still would appeal to horror fans, but tell people from jump that this is also a mystery series, and like let mystery fans try to figure out what's going on, and you know, because they still are using a lot of the best clue mechanics from the original Sal novel. So I do like that part of the direction, but just the way that these loops are presented give a lot of information too quickly for certain parts and leave out important other details. So it's just very bad for new fans. So I wanted to put that out there for anybody who, you know, was still on the fence about what I said. And I, if I remember correctly, I was still a little, like, I'm a little mixed on this. Now that I've seen more, good for old fans, bad if this is your first place to start.
So for this one, I've only read the first volume because only the first volume is out, but I had to talk about it. It's called Blue Period, and it's about a second year high schooler who is not really passionate about anything. He gets really good grades because his mom has sort of been very insistent about that. But it's almost like he doesn't really care about them being good. He's just like, all right, sure. Otherwise, he's kind of a delinquent. Like, he stays out really late. He just hangs out with his friends. He kind of goofs off a lot. He's, you know, got the dyed hair and everything. And so he's kind of a, you know, a mixed character. But he finds himself in, you know, his elective art class there and gets a little bit inspired and, like, pushes himself a little bit. And it kind of reawakens in him something, or maybe just first awakens, actually, in him this desire to be an artist. And so the first volume is, like, a lot about him kind of finding that out about himself, kind of, like, admitting that about himself, and then him, like, okay, like, if I'm going to dedicate myself to this, like, what does that mean and how do I do that? With the help of the art club, a really persistent art teacher, and then, like, other kids in the club. So, the series was so great just, like, from go on this, like, because it discusses so many different, like, it's not, like, super serious, but it is serious, but it's not, like, melodramatically serious, I guess. But, like, you know, I think probably because I'm so much older at this point, like, second year of high school is so long ago for me, that, you know, this is a guy who's in his second year of high school, and he's like, is there enough time for me to change my course of life? You know, like, this is something that people go through, you know, even in high school, where it's like, you got time. You got some time. Like, you can do this. Like, you can make a decision like this. And, like you don't have to be locked in at such a young age, I guess, which I thought was, like, really positive. They also talk about, like, the myth of talent in here. It starts off, actually, I think in the first chapter it basically gets brought up, because he is looking at another student's work who's, like, a senior, and he says something like, oh, you're so talented, or, you know, just something complimentary for sure. But, you know, the senior really reacts not aggressively, but is like, hey, I just want you to know that, like, I work really hard. And, like, I have dedicated myself to learning painting techniques to be good at painting. I didn't just, like, wake up and be good at painting. And so I think that also kind of, kind of opens a door in his mind, like, oh, wait a minute. Like, if you put in, like, what is effort versus talent, and like, how much can you learn, and like, how does that change things, and how does that kind of change your perspective if you realize that? I also really appreciate, as an artist myself, I really appreciate that sort of discussion be happening in an art manga, and just the idea that like everybody has maybe like inclinations, but that doesn't necessarily mean talent or like a natural ability to do something. So I liked that is discussed throughout, because he's also kind of feels like he's starting on the back foot, because he hasn't been drawing since he was, even in middle school, he like drew very little or whatever. So like him learning technique, and that's the other thing about the manga that's really cool, is that they actually talk about actual technique. There's like a section about perspective and like the different kinds, because the art teacher is like, because he's, new to it, like the audience gets to learn a little bit. It's not like super instructional, but I think it would, it has enough in there where it's like, oh, I never thought about that. Like, this is how you do this. This is like this type of shading, and like, this is how lighting works. Like, here's why it's like helpful to do still life. Like, this is what, kind of parts of the artist brain that works, and things like that. So thought that was like really great about it. And also, not that this is useful to me or most of us, but it actually talks about art colleges in Japan, and is like, here are the different ones, and like, here's what they like specialize in, and like, here's like what, so it's like actually talking about actual schools. Yeah, it was so good, everybody. It was so great. And I think because he's new to art and like learning it, I think that it's a manga that you don't have to be an artist to like appreciate it in any way, because he's really learning himself. So I don't feel like it's like, oh, I mean, obviously I really appreciated it, and I'm sure I appreciated it on levels that are very specific to artists, but I think that it's very accessible other anyway. I cannot tell you how I just read it. Can't wait for the second volume. Really, really highly recommend.
So, okay, will the sequel to this manga be called Rose Period?
Is that another
Yes,
Picasso
after his
period?
Blue Period came his Rose Period.
Okay, I did not remember that. So, I mean, it is. It's not really.
I just wanted to make a Picasso
It's.
joke.
I mean, they talk a little bit about Picasso at the beginning of the story, but I think it's actually called Blue Period because his first drawing and painting that he does is like all blue. And like he's like ins he gets really. I think it's kind of the him being inspired by the color blue, and like how there's different kinds of blue. Is like kind of the almost like the impetus for jumping into this. So like, but they do talk about Picasso very briefly at the beginning. So I was like, is it both? Is it, I guess it's both. I don't know.
I think also
So.
it's a very evocative name. So, oh, and my other question is, what were some major differences between American art school and Japanese art school from what you could tell?
Well, he since they're not actually in art school, like he's in high school, and it's not like an art high school. He's just in the art
Okay.
club.
I thought,
And they're talking about
yeah.
colleges, like they're talking about how to apply, 'cause like, oh, I forgot to mention. Thank you, actually, Al, is that basically he can't afford, so there's apparently only one public art school in Japan, And so it has like a very, very low tuition. And then all the other art schools are like private and I assume costs a lot more money. So the public art school is like incredibly competitive. They're all competitive, but like it's a super, super competitive school to get into. And he can't afford to like go to any other one because his family has already been like we can't send you to like some sort of private school, basically. So he's like, I have to get good to get into this school. So it's like there's also like a countdown of like how many days it is until the entrance exams for that school. And he has a fellow student who is also trying to get into that school. So they're kind of becoming friends through this process too. As far as differences, I mean, even the art club scenario, like, it felt very familiar. Like, the critique, because the teacher, you actually get to see her critique and, like, talk about the, you know, talk about different people's technique or, like, what they're into. And, like, for example, I thought this was really great where one of the students is, she wants to be an illustrator. So like a manga, you know, kind of illustrator. And he, you know, our main guy, for example, like wants to be a fine art oil painter, okay? So like two very different schools, but they're in the same art club and they're doing still lives. And the teacher is talking about how like doing still life will still help you become an illustrator because you will better understand like how a thing looks and like how it relates to other things. Like it was her kind of talking about like, because the student was sort of, oh, I don't want to do still life. Like it's so irrelevant to my what I want to do because like I want to draw like Bishoujo girls or whatever. And it's like, well, this can actually help you do that by like teaching you, you know, XYZ. So you just like, so I felt like, oh no, I've heard all of the like I've heard all of this before. I've been in a class to hear these things. So like in that sense, I felt like it was all very familiar.
So, Kate, I was inspired by what you said because the next show I'm going to talk about, one of the lines in it is, what do you call it? At one part of the song, they're like, you only have one chance to remake yourself. But at the end, the whole point at the end, the set, when they do the verse again later on in the song, they're like, what do you call it? You always have a chance to remake yourself.
That's so true. That's beautiful.
So, talking about a show that is beautiful and inspirational, just because I just like got a bug on me, there was no like need to, and I was like, I'm gonna rewatch all of March Comes Like a Lion, and damn, that series is so good, so good. I mean, I don't remember if I've talked about, I mean, I definitely talked about it when we did our decade in review, but that was just like me going on the memories of it. And so I was just like I was like, I remember loving this show, and I don't want to like get ahead on any of the shows I'm watching with my roommate, so let me go back and watch it. Like, let's see a show on rewatch if it will stand up. And just March Comes Like a Lion. Just, I like, it's definitely one of those shows I like was able to like look at how things were set up now that I knew how things were going, and like was really impressed how a lot of themes and moments and things that I might not have picked up being laid out at the beginning were laid out at the beginning of the series. So let me quickly tell what the series is about. It's about Ray. He loses his parents and his little sister in a horrible car accident while he was like on a clash trip, and nobody in his family will take him in. Like, basically all of his relatives are too distant, and like basically they want to send him to an orphanage. So one of his father's shogi friends offers to take in Ray, and Ray knows that basically his father's friend is obsessed with shogi. So he basically, as he says, makes a deal with the god of shogi to survive and throws himself into shogi. But basically, because of that, the dad focuses totally on Ray and kind of neglects his actual biological kids, which basically creates this huge rift in the family. And so the minute that Ray can live on his own, he like gets out of the house, but is just this horrifically depressed human being who basically just has to play this game to live. And generally just has a horrific case of depression. And it's, the story is ostensibly about shogi, and there's lots of great shogi in it. But the real story is Ray making this connection with this family that he kind of meets by coincidence, who kind of takes him in. And him learning to climb. Give Al a second here.
Al is having a moment. I just want to say, Al, that one of the most beautiful things to me about this show is that the last time you talked about it, you also got verklempt. So, like, clearly, it's just, like, emotionally resonant every time you watch it.
So yeah, it's about him just learning very slowly, very step by step, with lots of back and forth, lots of, you know, him getting better, him sliding back, climbing out of depression, and the stories of all the characters around him, who are all, even Ray, very flawed characters who are very humanized. It's just a wonderfully beautiful story where all the characters are just well designed. It's just a beautiful series. If you care nothing about shogi, I mean, like I said, it's really about Ray's journey. Like, basically, effectively, being so depressed that, like, even suicide isn't, like, an option. He just wants to march towards surviving and him just learning to be a person. Great series. Like, seeing a lot of the little seeds of other characters whose stories, because there are a lot of characters who seem very minor, who become very important, and seeing those seeds, and little hints by the author that these characters will be more important later on, I totally noticed them. Now that I know this character is going to be important, so I see why. That was great. Once again, as I mentioned, when the middle sister gets bullied in the second story, that is such a well-done bullying story, because I think it handles bullying and like so realistically, and the fact that even when the story is over, generally for the characters, it's very clear that it isn't fully over. It's just, this arc is done enough that we can move on and realize that this story isn't over, that all the characters involved are still going to be affected, but, which I feel is, you know, I feel like most of the time, you know, the person doing the bullying is defeated and all the people involved are better for it. Whereas I feel like it's much more realistic that that's not the case in this story. But it still feels like you had a satisfying arc, which I think was just brilliant. I will say that Ray's not stepsister, but, you know, adopted sister, you know. What do you call that when you are your...
Yeah, adopted sister. Yeah. Or, well, I guess you've been adopted, yeah. But I think adopted sister.
His adopted sister? I definitely see how the author was like, I'm going to make her the worst. And then I'm going to show how she's a sympathetic character. And then I'm like, I like what you do with most of the characters. Like, she has a boyfriend who's also super horrible. But I feel like you're not supposed to be sympathetic to him too much. So, but he gets decent moments of humanization where you, like, get why he's a horrible person and does bad things. But I don't feel like you're supposed to feel sympathy for him. But I'm like, oh, you want me to feel sympathy for the sister, but you did too good a job of making her horrible. Actively causing him psychological trauma, like, whenever her life is rough, is like, nope, you did too good a job of making her wretched. I know you want me to feel sympathy for her, and there's reasons, but you can't do that much in the beginning, and then maybe there are some sins that this character does that make me not want to forgive her. But, I mean, I feel like that's always a gamble when you do that with a character. But, I mean, she still feels like a real person. She doesn't just feel like, yeah, Snidely Whiplash. I mean, I have this feeling that the author wants you to have a little more sympathy for her than I think I was willing to give her.
Let me ask you a question now. Do you feel like the second watch through, did you have any, now you talked about like, oh, I saw the connecting tissue of certain things, but did you have like any new overall takeaways, like thematically, or, you know, just, did you have anything? And obviously, if you didn't, you didn't. But I didn't know if you, it was like, oh, I really noticed something, you know, about this that I didn't notice the first time.
I feel like if, not really. I feel like if anything, the author of March Comes Like a Lion is really good at connecting with the audience and being like, these are the themes that I want you to get. Like, I always felt like I knew what you wanted to express in any arc. I feel like that's one of her, like, but she's never, like, blatantly, like, here are my themes as a character spells it out. I feel like through just naturalistic dialogue, I feel she's great at doing that. If anything, I guess the only thing I There's this guy who's like the Majin, the big champ of the Shogi world, and like at the beginning he's just like this character that Ray talks about, and obviously since he's like, he holds all these titles and he's like the highest ranked member of the Shogi world, he'll just come up. Since Ray is a professional shogi player, the best of the best is going to come up. But I feel like it was a little more obvious to me from the beginning, that in many ways, this character is supposed to be what if Ray never met the Kurosawa family? If he just stayed as he was, this would be the man that he would become. Because the guy is like only shogi, like at one point he has like a he like wins a big tournament and becomes somewhat popular, so they have him do like an exhibition match against him. Not that he would win, but just like here's the young upcoming, prodigy against the original, young prodigy, and let's see them, have their first battle, which will surely, only per, be more intense as, the young one comes up in the ranks and, gains more experience. And so, he loses. It's a good match against, him being a young player against, this old, established player. And then, they're going back home in this rainstorm, and he like learns that like this guy literally needs handlers because he's just cut himself off from the world so much, because generally all he has is shogi and basically cannot has through an inability and just apathy, like not is no longer able to deal with the rest of the world or deal with people outside of the shogi world. Like it really impressed on me that this character is supposed to be like almost a warning sign of like if you don't keep up with the progress you've made, this is what you will become. And like, because it seems at first that this character might be like a dangerous rival or like the guy you gotta beat, and so you wouldn't think that he's like this warning sign of the depression part of him, but actually that's what he is. He's like the almost like the ghosts of Christmas, past, present, and future. If you don't change your ways, Ray, this is what you're doomed to become. But like nobody in the series ever says that. It's never, there's never a part where Ray is like, if I don't change my ways, this is. It's just very clear to me that this is what the author is trying to say. Like this is Ray, if he never deviated from his path, or if he, doesn't make the effort, this is what he will become, which is what I thought was very, was just brilliantly done.
So you like sort of recommend this
Yeah,
one.
They got a decent 7 out of 10. If you got nothing else going on, you can watch it.
Okay, well, I'm also moving on to a 10 out of 10 series for both of us, I think, which is I have been reading the Rose of Versailles manga. That is finally coming out in English. So I've never read the manga before. Al and I are huge fans of the anime. We love Lady Oscar. So, I think it's been a long time coming to get these manga.
I think that I am as interested as the audience in what your reaction is, just because I feel like both the anime and the manga are so, like, instrumental pieces of not only the shoujo genre, but of anime and manga in general, that I'm curious about it that way. And also that, like, it's one of those series where they're different. I mean, there's no crazy differences, but they are different enough that I'm curious to see what you have to say just in that regard.
So, for those who aren't in the know, The Rose of Versailles is about pre- and revolutionary France. It follows the story of Oscar and Marie Antoinette. Oscar is Marie Antoinette's captain of the guard, her royal guard, and is a woman. And it follows kind of the intrigue of the court, the lead up to revolution, kind of the lavishness of Versailles, and also deals, you know, heavily with like nobility and the aristocracy and gender, Oscar's kind of relationship with her, how she sees herself, how other people see her, and is just like really complex, and you know, is very much like her own and unique to her. And you know, Oscar is this very iconic character for Japanese audiences. So it's like, can't be, I feel like it cannot be overstated how much love there is for her. So this manga originally started like late 70s or like mid 70s, and then became a very famous anime. So I've wanted to read the manga for ages and ages and ages. The anime has been available, you know, for a while. So, and of course, this has been sort of a dream of people in the English language manga community that we never thought we would see.
And it's also worth noting that this was licensed by Udon like ages ago, and a lot of people were just worried it was never going to come out because it was like licensed and then years passed without any news.
So many years, like many, many, many. And the editions that they're releasing are like, oh my God, they're so beautiful. They are like double, so like an omnibus, so two volumes in one, hardcover, has color pages throughout. So it's not like we put all the color up front. Like wherever there were actual color pages, those, they just appear throughout the book. They have gold foil on the covers. I mean, they went all out. So the series is 5 omnibus volumes for a total of the original 10 volume manga series. So I've read like the first 2 omnibuses and I'm like in the middle of the third one. So definitely some things that I have noticed. So for those, again, who aren't, like, reading the Wikipedia of Rose of Versailles on the regular or whatever, you know, one of the big differences that anybody would notice immediately from the manga to the anime is that in the manga, Marie Antoinette is the main character. And Oscar becomes, like, a co-protagonist main character because she's so popular. This is well documented. And but in the by the time they made the anime, they already knew who everybody cared about. So it's like very clear in the anime. Like the anime is about Oscar. And like obviously Marie Antoinette is a big part of that story, but like the anime is about her. So I think it's not as if Oscar is person not appearing in this manga or anything, but like there is like a progression of how much of the story kind of turns to who at which periods of time. The other, well, there's so many things. I have so many thoughts. I feel like the other thing is that, I watched the anime quite a while ago at this point, so it's also possible that I don't have the greatest memory for a lot of this stuff, but Rosalie, who is a character in the series who is, like, kind of this, like, not a protege of Oscar. That's not the right term. But, like, this young woman who ends up kind of being taken in by Oscar. And, you know, she's originally a peasant. We find out a bunch of secrets about her that she didn't know about herself. And, like, it's very complicated and full of melodrama. Anyway, she, you know, like, she in this manga, she's just in it so much. And, like, I feel like in the anime, she's, like, not in it that much. I don't know.
So I know the answer to that, Kate. So apparently, Rosalie was a hated character in the manga. So she eventually gets downplayed. And so I assume in the way that Oscar gets upplayed because she was so popular, I think Rosalie got downplayed in the anime because eventually the manga has to downplay her because she was not a popular character at all in the manga, if I'm remembering correctly.
It's almost hard to believe because she has, like, a massive story. And maybe that's why. You know, maybe it was like, well, she had this massive story and then everyone was like, no, we don't care. I don't know. Like, when the changes happen, I don't know. But, like, I don't remember her. Like, I remember her from the anime, obviously. But I feel like her story is the same, but somehow they just, like, don't put it at the forefront as much, I guess, in the anime, maybe. One thing I noticed, Al, that I feel like I wrote this down specifically for you, is that the Duke d'Orléans, he looks different in the manga.
Ah!
He doesn't look nearly as dastardly. Like, he just looks like regular noble who kind of looks like he kind of looks like the king in the manga. And so it's like, he just, like, in the anime, he looks like freaking, he is so evil looking at all times. Like, I glint.
I mean, I think it says volumes that countless other anime since then is like, Duke d'Orléans, the most evil man in all of France. Duh! I'm sure, like, some French historians, like, would watch this and be like, what?
They're like, his role is disputed. Like,
but
no. I mean, he's still totally, like, plotting in the manga for sure, but he doesn't physically look like he is plotting against you at all times.
I feel like the anime is a creature of 2020 hindsight, where they're like, all right, people love Oscar, play up the Oscar. People hate Rosalie, play down the Rosalie. People think the Duke d'Orléans is the evilest guy, we make him, what do you call it, the evilest guy.
And, like, it's, you know, the melodrama is the same, for sure. Like, the high, high, high melodrama. The story itself, as far as I can remember, is, like, exactly the same so far. Like, there's not really been any changes. I will say that the pace feels quite different, because I was like doing some math to figure this out. But so the first 30 episodes of the anime, so the anime is 40 episodes long. The first 30 episodes cover volumes 1 through 4 of 10. So 30 episodes for 4 volumes and 10 episodes for the rest of the story. Now, so you can tell also, I think, in a certain sense, what people liked the best, what people enjoyed the most which is like the early court intrigue, stuff like that. Like basically the first four volumes are like a 20-year span in the manga. It's like going like it's like lightning fast, because like by the middle of volume 3 of the omnibus, so that's basically like 5, like the revolution is like, it's like on the doorstep, like it's about to, things are about to really get heat up. So like, now I do know, without spoiling the anime for anybody who hasn't seen it, because I really don't want to do that to you, because I mean, if you haven't seen it, it's coming out on Blu-ray soon. It's going to be a great time to get it and watch it.
Kate, are you implying that Maria Antoinette might not make it out okay?
You know, so without spoiling that, I do know that the manga covers more ground, let's say, than the anime. For a longer period of time. Because the anime's last episode, a big thing happens, and then it's sort of like, boom, 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 here's what happened to everybody. So I think, from what I can understand, since I don't actually, not all the omnibuses are out yet, so I can't check this, but from what I understand, that sort of like episode 40 where we tell you what happened to everybody is like, oh, has more time to like happen in the manga. So I think that sort of, I don't know how much more, but you know, there's more manga story than there is anime story. Because the anime stops at a specific place. So that pacing is like a little bit different. But I love the anime because, you know, it's 70s style. It's just got such great style. It's got such drama. It's got great music. You know, it's got it all. But the manga is so gorgeous. I mean, it's incredible. Her paneling is just exquisite. You know, every page is just amazing looking. And it's kind of ridiculous just how incredible it looks at all times. So it's like it can't even compare. And I'm just looking at like all these details and, you know, screen tones and, you know, the way a page is laid out is like a thing to behold in this manga. So it's been a real joy. And, you know, I do find it so interesting, Rose of Versailles. I think we've talked about it a lot. But, you know, history is very interesting. I love history, particularly like this period. I think it's very interesting to read about. But, you know, especially a character like Marie Antoinette is so fictionalized in history. And we don't have a lot of, like, I find it actually weird how, like, it feels like we don't have that much information about, like, who she really, like, who, to separating the fact and the fiction about her, even though that, it, for the most part, it wasn't actually that long ago. It's not like before people kept records or like before people wrote letters to each other or whatever. But she is like, you know, this such a larger than life character at this point that I think it's interesting in Rose of Versailles that she's really portrayed very tragically and like very naive, which I think is pretty common in portrayals of her. But I think there's other ways to look at her and to think about her. So it's not like, I'm not going to say that like Rose of Versailles is like, you know, I think it's following a popularized mythos mm-hmm. about her, I guess. It's not, you know, I don't totally disagree with that. You know, she's 14 years old when she is thrown, given to another country and been like, here, marry some random guy that you've never met. So, you know, I think kind of actually what you were talking a little bit about, Al, not to the extent, I don't think, but certainly like, we can forgive people for certain things because of their circumstances, but it still doesn't change what they necessarily did. So it doesn't necessarily make the things that they did okay. Like, we can understand or, like, be like, wow, that was, they were probably in a really tough situation. But, like, that doesn't mean you didn't do the thing. So I think Marie Antoinette is, like, you know, just, like, her and Revolutionary France and, like, the nobles of that time is, like, we're getting a lot of their perspective in the story. We do see some peasants, and they do talk often about it, and, like, part of this story is Oscar having a realization about what life is like for regular people. Like, that is part of her story. But there is also, like, a lavishness to the whole, you know, to the whole story. And, like, the main characters are all, like, wealthy. Taxes are brought up. Robespierre is here. Saint Just. They're all there, you know. I should follow up by saying on my history rant that, like, obviously, the French Revolution didn't really work out great for the other side either. It's not like they were, like, the coolest dudes who ever decided to throw a revolution. So, you know, but I think it was a very interesting time. So it's very interesting to read about it in a fictional way as well as in a real way. So I recommend everyone do both.
So, Kate, great. You answered most of my points that I was curious about. One important point. Saint Just, since you mentioned him, is he as crazy a psychopath in the manga as he was in the anime?
So he has actually not appeared as, like, the bomber yet. He has only just, he, like, appeared, like, Robespierre has also only appeared, like, twice and been like, it's me, Robespierre! And so Saint Just, I think in one of those scenes, he was like, and it's me! And then, like, nothing has happened really with that yet. The Black Knight whole episode, that all happened. You know, like, that's all, like, gone on and whatnot. But, like, yeah, so we haven't gotten to, like, full revolution yet.
The audience and I can look forward to, I'm going to call it, you updating us at a later podcast about that burning question that maybe only I have, but still.
I mean, everybody wants to know about him. Everybody. I know everyone listening to this podcast loves history. They love me talking about history. That is the whole reason that they're here.
I was just about to say, this whole conversation reminded me of that article you sent me about Nero and, like, just, I mean, obviously Nero is harder to get a good gauge on because they're just so farther back in the past. And as meticulous as the Romans were on record keeping, just time murders so much. It's like hard to get a, like, especially since so many of the portrayals are just, like, diametrically opposed. Like, it's pretty clear that the truth is somewhere in the middle, but that's still a pretty broad range.
No, actually, that's a really good example because there was, like, a lot of propaganda written against him at the period, and, like, that's a lot of the surviving text. And, like, similarly to Marie Antoinette, like, a lot of, like, surviving stuff is, like, pamphlets that were, like, it's like, yeah, actually, they probably did suck that bad. But also, like, so much of the, surviving material is, like, specifically politically against them. So, like, it's hard to know, like, no, it wasn't, like, the surviving texts are, like, I'm a historian, who was just had no side in any of this and just was here to record what was happening, you know, so.
Any bias you find, that's all in your head. I'm 100, 1,000% neutral.
I'm so excited to be, like, it was so weird because, like, I got the manga and the omnibus and I was like, maybe I'll read it, you know, maybe I'll read it. And now I just, like, can't stop reading it. Like, so it's powerful, you know, in a certain, I don't know if everybody would like how melodramatic it is because it is, like, high levels. So I don't feel like I can say, like, everybody would enjoy this, but I do feel like it's just so engrossing, and if you're interested at all in either the history of anime or the history of manga, it is so influential in that way, so it's worth it even just for that. Even though I know how this ends, both historically and fictionally, I'm still, like, very anxious to see the rest of the series through, so.
I think I've been coming up with some great segues, but there's really no good way for me to segue to this last one from Rosa Versailles. I was doing some good...
Oh, come on, there's gotta, let's see. Sword fighting?
All right. So, we've been watching, I feel like, for a decent amount of time, neither of us were huge isekai fans. But I feel like, over the years, we've discovered, actually, there is a lot of garbage in isekai. But I think we've both separately and individually, separately and collectively found that if you dig through the trash heap that is isekai, you will find one or two decent gems in there. And so I remember us having, like, okay feelings about one series that I heard a lot of people who I respect, not just randos on the internet, who, like, you know, who fucking like Shield Hero and thereby, you know, prove that, what do you call it, just randomly listening to the masses is not your best bet. The masses are sometimes right, but that doesn't mean you just randomly listen to them. People I respected liked one series, so I went back and I checked out Log Horizon, because the thing that I heard was Log Horizon says, all right, all these people are playing an online game and they get trapped in the world and now it's real. But the shtick that people liked about Log Horizon was that they went out of their way to try to be real about it as opposed to wish fulfillment about it. Because most of these isekai stories are, I was a kid who played a game and was really good at it, and then I got transported into the game, and I am a god who rules, you know, is the best at the game, and then the hero of the fantasy world. But this was a male protagonist one that wasn't that formula, and they had a lot of real-world economics and politics of, like, all right, if you were all these people put in this fantasy world, how would that affect the economics of that world? How would it affect the politics of that world? How would it affect the psychological nature of both the people thrown in there and the NPCs of that world? And so I was like, all right, this seems like, because they all have to have a twist, this seems like a twist that I could find interesting. And, like, there was some weirdness about the first episode, but we were like, eh. Like, it doesn't look like the other trash we've seen. Maybe we'll give it a further watch down the road. So I did. I did give it that further watch down the road. And I have to say, I watched both seasons, and I was pretty pleasantly surprised. I think, one, the whole premise that, like, let's deal with the actual ramifications. The power fantasy of how that, I think that's an interesting thing of, like, what, how would this actually play out? I think that's interesting. Because, you know, all these characters who were NPCs are now real people. And, like, one of the things that comes up is, like, oh, PCs are kind of dicks. So, like, a lot of the NPCs of this world, even though we're these superpowered guys, are like, ah, great. Now, like, apparently in this world, like, when they were playing the games, they were, their avatars were real, but they were just kind of like, almost like robots roaming through the world. But now they're these people with personality, and all these NPCs living in this world are like, oh, wow, now all these god-powered, like, robots have personalities, and this totally changes everything we think about them. And, like, they're like, oh, wow, they kind of have a lot of resentment. And, like, yeah, if you were a PC in an MMORPG, the NPCs probably might have a decent amount of resentment to the, what do you call it, godlike PC characters. So that's there's a lot of interesting things like that. And just, like, how the economics change, and like, there's all groups of, you know, people who are resentful, people who are trying to take advantage of the PCs, and, you know, all things like that. A lot of, like, people are thrilled at first, and then, like, some people totally are into it. Some people are, like, totally psychologically scarred that they can't get back home. Also, one of the things I think that really helps is that the main character is totally a support class. So if he is just alone in a fight, he gets wiped immediately. He needs other players to buff and to debuff other characters to be successful. So he always has to work in a group. He can't be just the lone hero that everyone flocks to. He's still, like, a genius strategist. So it is still a little bit of, like, you know, wish fulfillment. But since he is the support character, he always has to negotiate and rely on other characters, which I think adds, like, avoids one of the main pitfalls of the general genre, which I think is very refreshing, that this character has to constantly work with others and figure out what other people want, what other people's motivations are, and, like, tailor himself or, like, his strategies to that. I think, which is very useful. And I think just, I just feel like the male power fantasy of some of the other series just makes them very detestable to a lot of people. And I feel like this helps ease that out a little bit. They're even, there's this one interesting character where there's this, like, big burly dude who, what do you call it? I'm sure if you've watched, enough, anime, he's, you know, he's in this guild where it's filled with girls, and they have, like, a super hot, guild leader, and all the girls are in love with him, and this one guy, and he comes off as, like, the very cliched, what do you call it, like, gay stereotype character. But it turns out what his story is that the person playing the character was a woman who originally played him as the super burly man guy, And then when she is in the character, she is just, she's no longer playing a character. She's just being herself. Thereby, she would, what do you call it? And so, like, it's kind of like a twist. You assume, just watching anime, oh, this is just the, what do you call it, very stereotypical gay character. But it's actually, it is actually a woman player in a male character's body. And she is just, you know, basically being herself in this character. And I thought that was an interesting, like, look. And just, there are one or two other characters who have, you eventually find out that they're, you know, their player and the character that they were playing are different in how their character has to, you know, deal with that. And, like, you know, now that they're stuck in this, you know, the character that they were playing. Or, you know, once again, in any of these things, you know, what is the difference between the person playing the character and their, you know, form that they are in this world, which I thought brought up some interesting things as well. I don't know. I don't think that it still has enough isekai stuff that someone who totally hates isekai might not, probably would still not like it, but I feel like if you're burnt out on isekai, or you only have a very select few shows that you like, I think that, because they still, like, have menus and stuff, and, like, they're, like, trying to figure out how the menus work in the real world and how they work in the so famous world. So there's still, like, elements of that. And it is very clearly written by people who play MMORPGs. And there is some, like, distinct, like, stuff for the MMORPG player kind of stuff. So, I mean, realize that that is still distinctly in the genre. I think it just does enough interesting stuff that I can recommend it to people who would watch, who listen to our podcast, and not, it's not like Konosuba, where I have to be really, like, I liked it, but man, are there so many caveats. Whereas I feel like this, I feel like is an easy recommend to a lot of people in our audience, because I feel like it does enough that's interesting. And I'm curious about a lot of the mysteries of how they got dragged here, and how the main characters, like, kind of secretly trying to figure out how they got here, and, like, what's going on.
Oh, okay. That was going to be my question, was, so, after two seasons, it has not wrapped up the story.
No. In fact, I coincidentally did not know that in the winter season next year, there's going to be season 3. Which I still don't think. I think the novel series is still going on. But there will be a third season. That is already announced. It was actually supposed to come out earlier, but COVID. Yes, January. So yeah, there's some major revelations at the end of each season. So there's some big revelations at the end of season 2. But it's still very clearly an ongoing series. But actually, was surprised how much I enjoyed it, and I feel like it does a lot of things that I think were different and interesting. Oh, I will warn you that the main paladin tank guy also is kind of like panty obsessed, so. He's not the main character, but he is, like, a major character. So, you know, just because we discussed it before, he's not so egregious, but he's there. I should mention it.
So the year of 2020 is horrible in, like, 9,700 ways. but we actually discovered isekai that was good in 2020, so.
There's always a silver lining, Kate. I won't say how thick it is, but there's always a silver lining. That's another November speakeasy. I want to mention that we already know what our next month's topic will be. It'll be a two-parter. A part number one will be Kate's return to Anime Secret Santa. Kate and I are both participating in the Secret Santa project this year, once again run by All Geeks Considered. We are looking at the first season of Lupin the Third, otherwise known as Green Jacket Lupin. So, next month you will get to hear our thoughts on both, both it being just our thoughts on Lupin the Third, which just seemed a great thing for us to review on the podcast, and just our entry into the Secret Santa project. And in the second half, we will be wrapping up The Great Pretender.
I hope.
Hope. If not, we'll have some.
Because, it still says, it's coming to Netflix in November. And it's like, okay, but when?
So, tentatively, we will also be reviewing The Great Pretender next month. If that doesn't happen, part one is fixed. Part two, probably The Great Pretender.
I hope. Kate was
wise to temper our expectations, depending on seeing how everything has gone this year. Probably.
I mean, hopefully. I'm dying to watch the rest of the show. So, and I'm very excited to watch Lupin. I'm excited to do Secret Santa. I actually don't think I've participated, except for the first 2 years, maybe?
I think we did 3 years. Was it Technolize?
I mean, you've done all of them, but I tapped out pretty early.
I think, it was Technolize, man.
Okay, right. Well, I don't have any concerns that Lupin the Third is going to be that. So, it's going to be fine. It's going to be great. See everybody next month.